Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris Ronchi, Amy Marks Kors, The Chris and Amy Show.
Check it out.
St. Louis, Mound City, we are going to have a great day today.
On 104.1 FM.
Let's take it from the top.
KMOX.
Let's go. John Hancock, Chris Ronchi. John is in for Amy today. Thank you. Thank you for joining us this morning on a beautiful Thursday. It's not hot and gross yet, but it will be. Don't you worry. 314-436-7900 to join the show. Your thoughts, your text messages, your phone calls. And if you want to, we encourage them on the Odyssey app. You can send us voice messages. You just record us, give us like 30 seconds or less. Tell us what your thoughts are. It could be about anything, or you can be responding to something that we're talking about in the moment. Odyssey app, AUDACY. If you like, you can watch us. You can see our beautiful faces.
Oh, boy.
You could see John Hancock's eyes, and you could see my glasses just by watching us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. We are on Twitter at Chris Amy KMOX.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everyone will be talking about.
Another late night show has been, it's in trouble. Jimmy Kimmel has been pulled off the air indefinitely by ABC following some comments about the Charlie Kirk assassination and the aftermath.
And as the calendar turns the page, the St. Louis Blues open their training camp today. First game, October the 9th.
Well, hockey season's about to happen, John. Cardinals season is still ongoing for about another week-ish, week and a half, I guess.
Yep.
Nine games left to go. They lost to the Reds. They got an off day today. And then it will be the final home series of the season. The Brewers are in town starting tomorrow.
Mm.
So that's what's going on. So what has been the big news since yesterday evening, Jimmy Kimmel, who is a late night talk show host of the Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, Stephen Colbert, Seth Meyers. Those are the late night hosts now, the network late night hosts. And there's more than that, but those are the most prominent ones at the moment. Jimmy Kimmel was pulled off the air for a comment that executives with Nexstar did not particularly care for. And this is what happened during a monologue on Monday. And this is what led to, I guess you could call it a suspension. Maybe it's a little worse than that. But this is what Jimmy Kimmel said in his monologue on Monday.
We had some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it. In between the finger pointing, there was grieving. On Friday, the White House flew the flags at half staff, which got some criticism. But on a human level, you can see how hard the president is taking this.
My condolences on the loss of your friend Charlie Kirk. May I ask, sir, personally, how are you holding up over the last day and a half, sir?
I think very good. And by the way, right there, you see all the trucks? They just started construction of the new ballroom for the White House, which is something they've been trying to get, as you know, for about 150 years. And it's going to be a beauty.
Yes. He's at the fourth stage of grief, construction. Demolition, construction.
So that is Jimmy Kimmel, and that's pretty much what happened on Monday, and those comments led to his ultimate suspension. And I will preface this by saying I never really have particularly cared for Jimmy Kimmel. I don't think he's all that funny. That's just me. I think politically we probably align on a lot of stuff. I just, as a comedian, he's just never been my favorite. I never liked The Man Show. I don't like Adam Carolla either. I just didn't like that whole thing. I don't like him as a late night host. For me, it was just sort of bland. That's always been the case. But to me, John, I find this a little bit alarming, and it's not that ABC pulled him off the air, because it is totally their right to do that.
Right.
What is concerning is the FCC chair, Brendan Carr, who had made a comment that either you do something about it, and I'm paraphrasing, that you do something about it or we'll do it the hard way, you know, which is implying, hey, you better take care of this guy or we're going to do something about it. That's a government entity pressuring a broadcast entity into making some sort of move. And I know a lot of people have argued that this is not a First Amendment issue, but I don't know how you can look at it any other way. It's a government entity pressuring a broadcast network to do something they want them to do.
Yeah, well, the FCC has authority over the air broadcast. They don't have authority over cable channels in the same manner they do over broadcast, whether it be radio or television, the old traditional over-the-air broadcast. So does ABC have a right to decide who they want to put on the? Absolutely, they have that right to decide. And it really was less ABC's decision in this case as it was Nexstar and Sinclair, which combined, you're looking at about 80% of the local television news stations in the country between those two companies. Nexstar is in the process of trying to acquire yet another series of television stations owned by a third company. And in order for that to go through, that purchase, it's a $6 billion purchase. In order for that to go through, the FCC will need to amend their rules to allow Nexstar to own a larger percentage of television stations than the regulations currently allow. So that will take a proactive step by the Federal Communications Commission. Nexstar and Sinclair, and Sinclair is a very much a right of center focused corporation. Together, they tell ABC, hey, we're not going to air this guy's show anymore. And ABC, who is owned by Disney, made the decision that they were going to indefinitely suspend that program. All of that, that fact set right there, if it's your affiliates are pressuring the parent corporation acquiesces to other private businesses, that is completely consistent with First Amendment practices. Your point is that if this was a pressure from a federal entity, the Federal Communications Commission, that led to this decision, that clearly is an inappropriate use of government power. I don't know. I mean, the facts are what they are here. Nexstar is doing what they're doing here. That fact set is solid, but I don't know that you can make the leap that it was the FCC pressure that led to the ending of this program.
It may not be.
Right.
But it was pretty direct.
It's a bad
public
look.
It was public pressure. And who knows if that's what it is, but if you're trying to get this big deal done, Nexstar and Tegna, and you need the FCC to go along with it, what else would you argue? I mean, yeah, at absolute minimum, it looks really bad. That's just at minimum. But it's almost like, you know, you can't threaten the president's life. Like, I can't get here. You know, you can't go on the air and say and make a threat, even if you're joking. Right.
Right.
Like, so those words carry some weight. So if the FCC chair is basically saying, do something about this or we're going to, what are you supposed to take from that? What is Nexstar supposed to do other than, maybe we need to make some sort of move here so this deal can go through, because they desperately need that deal to go through. If the situation were reversed.
Well, that's it.
And it were a conservative that was being pulled off the air, you can absolutely bet that conservatives would be really upset about this.
Yeah, And that's my, you know.
And we'll be claiming First Amendment violations. You know,
my thing here is I don't like an expansionist federal government involved in everything. Now, you've got to have regulation, but it ought to be as limited as needed. And, you know, if you had a Barack Obama's head of the FCC going after, you know, conservative talking heads, there'd be outrage about that, because that's the government injecting itself into the speech that's going out on the public airways. And I have general concern about the expansion of executive authority in this country. It didn't begin with Donald Trump, but it certainly is in full flow under the Trump administration, that this reach of the federal government into every aspect of our lives, whether it be owning 10% of a private business, which the federal government now does with Intel, or things of using the FCC and other federal agencies to coerce, you know, that's troubling to me.
Yeah, and I don't know what happens next year or how many other networks or broadcast companies acquiesce to a president who is pretty hypersensitive to criticism. So Kimmel is one of those who is constantly making fun of Trump or criticizing Trump. And, you know, sometimes he's not doing it in a funny way. He's just directly right. criticizing the president and has been doing that for years. Same thing with Stephen Colbert. So this is now two different late night hosts who have been overtly critical of the president who are being taken off the air one way or another. You know, Colbert's contract being allowed to expire. And now you've got Kimmel, who has just been pulled off the air. The optics are horrifically bad. And I think that if it were a Democratic president and, you know, his appointee to the FCC, who was doing all of this to a conservative host on Fox News, to Gutfeld, for example, I don't like Greg Gutfeld, but I wouldn't like that either.
Right.
I wouldn't like the FCC pressuring him, or...
Of course, the FCC doesn't have authority over Fox
because it's cable. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's different. But, I mean,
yeah.
You know, in principle, if that were the case, I would have a serious problem with that. And I feel like anybody who is a constitutionalist or somebody who believes in the First Amendment, I don't know how you could be good with this.
Yeah.
Just remove your politics from it and think about what we're talking about.
The marketplace should take care of issues like this.
Right.
If Kimmel's ratings are in the toilet, or if there's a large public outcry that he needs to go. And in this case, that does exist. That's the way the marketplace of ideas works. And you've seen conservatives who have lost. I remember the Roseanne Barr case several years ago where she was on the top rated show. And I don't even remember what she said, but she said something through social media that drew outrage and the show gets canceled. So, you know, the marketplace does a pretty good job of, you know, deciding who gets elevated, who gets airtime, who gets fired. Yeah, you know, if your ratings go in the toilet, you're probably out of a job. But the federal government shouldn't be making those decisions.
And in fact, David Frum, you've heard of him. He's been, I think he's been with The Atlantic for a long time. He's a writer.
Sure.
He posted this yesterday, trying to imagine the reaction if the Biden administration had demanded Fox fire Greg Gutfeld because he wasn't sufficiently sad about the assault on Paul Pelosi. And Roseanne Barr, who you just mentioned, she retweeted it and said, yeah, imagine an administration putting pressure on a television channel to fire a comedian they didn't like. She's referring to herself.
Right.
However, when that happened to her, it was 2018. Who was the president?
Right.
Donald Trump. So it wasn't Joe Biden who put pressure on her network to fire her.
It was the marketplace.
Correct.
It was the public. It was outcry from the public. And outcry from the public is a good thing generally in this country. And because I believe in markets. They're not perfect. Free enterprise, the markets aren't perfect.
Right.
The marketplace,
sometimes the market gets it very wrong.
Yeah. Marketplace of ideas isn't perfect, but it's... Why it works and why it's good is because it's not the government. And the entire, I said this the other day, and I apologize if I'm repeating myself, but the entire construct of the United States government was a document designed to limit the power of that government. And it's unlike any country in the world in that regard. And we have a constitution that has held up to this point precisely because it limits and puts restrictions and restraints on the power of government. And that's why this nation has worked as it has. And I fear watching an expansionist government, I don't think that's going to be healthy for the Republic.
Let's hear from you on this. You can send us voice messages on the Odyssey app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Text the show, 314-436-7900. You can call as well. We're going to talk to Scott Jennings, who is a contributor to CNN. Scott is on pretty much every day at some point of CNN's broadcast.
He's got a good gig there.
He's got a great gig there. He's there all the time.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
John Hancock and Chris Ranji, we were talking about the Jimmy Kimmel situation. He's been pulled off of his show, at least for the time being. It is a temporary situation.
I don't know.
I should say indefinite, right. Which could be temporary. It could be that he is completely gone. And you mentioned Sinclair, John, which is a broadcast company, and they own stations all over.
Yeah.
They have local stations here in St. Louis. They're all over the country. And Sinclair had put out a statement, and part of the statement was that Jimmy should apologize. Kimmel right. should apologize for what he's done. And then should also make a meaningful personal donation to Charlie Kirk's Turning Point USA. As, you know, I suppose in a part of the apology right. that he should make a meaningful monetary donation. And Brendan Carr, who is the FCC chair, and we were talking about him, he was on CNBC, and this happened earlier this morning.
I think Sinclair has every right to call for that. Again, you know, Sinclair affiliates with Disney. They take Disney contract. They have a contractual relationship with Disney, and that's between the two of them to figure out, you know, what's going to make sense to make both of them comfortable with the relationship going forward. But again, over the years, it would be unthinkable for Sinclair, for Nexstar, for local TV stations to actually say, you know what? You know, we're not going to take this particular programming that's coming out of New York and Hollywood and send it to Pennsylvania and Utah. And so the idea that local broadcasters feel like they can push back, I think that's a much, much healthier dynamic for the country right now.
So what he's saying is the local entities have taken control of their products, which really isn't what's happened here. This is from the top down. I mean, these the show has been pulled from the top down. It's not local broadcast companies saying we're not going to air Jimmy Kimmel anymore. That's not what's going on.
Well, it's local broadcast companies that are owned by massive corporations.
Right.
And I think the ABC decision was reactive rather than proactive. I think they were reacting to the fact that some vast percentage of their affiliates that are owned by two companies, but in terms of their affiliates, it's a vast percentage of them said, hey, we don't want this program. We're not going to air it. And so for ABC, which I'm sure the expense of producing the Jimmy Kimmel show is not insignificant, it's a business decision. What Carr said there on that tape, I got no problem with. I've got no problem with it. It was what he said yesterday on a podcast where the one you quoted, Raj, where he said we can either do this the easy way or the hard way. He needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's a federal bureaucrat with vast authority over these things, with pending issues by at least one of those companies right now in his purview, saying that. And that is not, in my opinion, a proper way for a federal bureaucrat to inject themselves into the marketplace.
So one thing we really haven't even addressed here, and I know we have to get to break, is the comment itself. And I don't think this is so much about the exact joke or the comment Kimmel made on Monday. It's a collection of stuff. It's the president just doesn't like Jimmy Kimmel and wants him off the air.
He's been clear about that. And that's so fine.
And then, yeah, it's fine if he wants that. He can't demand it. He should not be able to demand it. But was I guess I'm trying to figure out what was offensive about the comment, because he wasn't making a joke about Charlie Kirk or the murder. He was criticizing the reaction to it from certain people, which I'm not sure where the offense is.
I think it had to do with the fact that Kimmel was trying to ascribe MAGA motives to the shooter on a Monday after the text exchange was released by prosecutors that did not indicate that he had MAGA sympathies. I think that's what the outrage is from.
Is it warranted outrage? Is it outsized? It seems a little outsized to me.
Yeah, you know, it's yeah, outrage, I guess, is in the eye of the beholder. And, you know, my only issue with this, I really don't have an issue with them firing, getting rid of Jimmy Kimmel. I do have an issue with the chairman of the FCC coming out and say we could do this the easy way or the hard way. That's mafia-type behavior.
We'll pivot here for just a moment. And high school students around the country here in America are they're losing ground in math and in reading. Not quite as proficient as they once used to be, which can be a problem for us in the future as a whole. We are going to talk to Karen Aronian, an education and parenting expert. He'll join us next on KMOX.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
John Hancock, Chris Ranji on KMOX. It is the Chris and Amy Show. And we were talking about kids around the country who are losing a lot of ground to the rest of the world in math and in reading, which could pose a problem for us down the road and something we need to address quickly. To discuss this with us is an education and parenting expert, Karen Aronian, who's an educator formerly in the New York City public school system. And Karen is with us on KMOX. Appreciate your time, Karen. How are you?
Great. Great to be with you. Hi, Chris. Hi, Brad. Hi.
Hi. So how are you doing? It's good to have you with us. And all right, so let's talk about where we are as a country right now. How bad is the situation in terms of math and reading scores or aptitude for kids?
Right. I mean, we have the worst reading scores reported through the NAEP, which is our National Assessment of Educational Progress, since 1994. And unfortunately, math, worst in 10 years since 2014, okay, plus or minus some months. So we're just falling off. And, you know, it was there before the pandemic cliff as well. And I'm sorry to also throw into the mix that science is down as well.
So, yeah, I think that it's an important point that you raise here, that this was happening before COVID. And it's very easy to blame COVID for it, that, well, all these kids had to stay home from school. So certainly they're still affected by that. But COVID happened everywhere. It happened in countries around the world. So why is it worse here than in those other countries that also experienced COVID?
Absolutely. And I just want to jump back and say I gave you the worst figures up front. Those are our 12th graders, and they get tested through the NAEP every 4 years, while our fourth and our eighth graders get tested every 2 years. So what we're seeing now are actually reports from the 2022-2023. These tests are administered in March, and then they come out in September. So it's quite sobering. But, you know, again, we just got the 12th graders report this year, and that was a sad state of affairs. But to your point, why is this America's issue? Well, number one, we don't have standardized curriculum for the most part in math and science and obviously English. We tend to, you know, go with state and district approaches on that. And so, you know, in terms of the question you raise in regard to what we're seeing on our home front comparatively to what we're seeing abroad, we are actually in the PISA scores. These are the scores administered for international countries' level of their state of education. And we are 26th. So the leaders are the Asia Pacific regions and Norwegians, and they have standardized curriculum. And they also stay the course culturally. So, you know, what they start school continues at home. And it's, you know, a full court press.
Yeah, and I think the cultural factors, particularly if you're talking about Asians, you know, the Norwegians, a lot of the European countries, education is the priority in families. And it's less so here. Does the data, I'm wondering, the test scores, are you able to cross-tabulate that with socioeconomic conditions? Are there particular subsets of the population where we're seeing this deficiency more pronounced?
Yeah, you hit it on the head. It's our most underserved struggle the most. And whatever was declining before, we saw a giant dip in what came back for socioeconomic levels, students with disabilities, and for, you know, students that have lower level of parent education in their family, so their backgrounds in education. You know, these are the societal factors that weigh in on student learning.
So this is not an issue that is specific to the United States, because artificial intelligence is going to end up affecting everybody, and it already is. And there are some concerns about how AI will affect kids' learning, or how they learn, or what they retain. Is it useful? Is it more detrimental than it is useful? How do you see artificial intelligence affecting the very thing we're talking about now?
Yeah, I mean, it's both a blessing and a curse. You know, first of all, when you look at, you know, this report, the NAEP report, it more or less is a blessing in disguise, because it alerts us that we have to pull up our socks. Now, we've known this, but there are so many factors that weigh in on why we are where we are now, having to do with curriculum. Digital inculcation, which you're mentioning, pandemic, chronic absenteeism, and then the lack of intervention, attention, and monitoring. But with regard to AI, initially, right, this looked like all blue sky. We're going to get in there. We're going to use education tech. We're going to personalize learning. We're really going to be able to attack and get in and make a difference with our lowest performing students. However, students, you know, and this gives you an idea of what happened with the 12th graders. You know, they're the first ones who kind of were inculcated into AI and, you know, and of course in the pandemic as well. And they're misusing it. You know, they're using it to do their work. They're not thinking critically. They are not, you know, coming, they're not struggling. They're not taking the time to get through a passage. They're just reading the synopsis and spitting it out. So what did schools do? They said, hey, we're going to start, you know, having you write that essay in class. Well, you know, there's the flop. So can we make headway with AI in education? Absolutely, because we can identify the learning challenges that, you know, every child has and probably every adult. I mean, no one has had a perfect education. We all have some challenges, and obviously we all have some places where we hit it out of the park. And so with that in mind, we can let these AI systems track our students and bring them to what they need to learn and make progress. But no doubt about it, the facilitators are in the classroom, and they're us. They're the people who surround our students that have to constantly check in to see where they're at. And then we have to intervene.
Yeah, I'm curious, and you may not know the answer to this. It seems to me, and I'm not something I follow, you know, actively, but it seems to me that there's more diffused opportunities for K through 12 students to, whether it be charter schooling, school choice programs, homeschooling, virtual learning, which is a fairly recent phenomenon. Is the number, the percentage of American students in public schools, public educational institutions, is it decreasing right now? And if so, is it a substantial decrease or just marginal?
Yes, again, we are seeing a higher percentage of students going into homeschooling. So it has been exponentially going up. And likewise to charters and for families that want to take over their students' education, they, in often cases, can apply their educational fund from their state into their students' learning. We've even seen this possibility for students getting ready for standardized test prep. They can take those dollars and put them into that prep, so that's helpful. And in terms of, you know, the factors of the change in education, well, it's constantly been in motion. It's a lot to keep up with. The benefits of what we're seeing right now, to your point, are that we're looking. We're actually getting a view, you know, behind the curtain, which started in the pandemic. And a lot of people didn't like what they saw. So they said, let me take this into my own hands. So, yes. There's been a major boon to homeschooling numbers, which used to be tiny. It used to really be around like 5% about, let's see, going back to 2019 or so. So, but since that time, it's, you know, doubling. So we're seeing that push into those alternatives really, really, you know, charting up. And, you know, I think that people can make a melange of education. If they're going to stay in the public schools, and, you know, there's a lot happening there right now, which is exciting. And there is, because of these numbers, because of what we're seeing, because the flux in education, states have their hands on the handlebars. And they are really needing to, redevelop what and revisit all their practices. And this wake-up call brings them to the task, as does, you know, the money and the decision-making coming into their states. So, I, you know, there are bright spots on the horizon with this. And these metrics are different at district levels. You know, for instance, in Missouri, they basically stayed the same overall. So, what you had was they statistically aligned the fourth and eighth graders with the national average on the assessments. Now, were those exceptional? No. 75% were above basic on the scale of below basic, proficient, advanced scale. So these changes take time. And so we're going to see, you know, what happens next. We're due to retest in March, and then we'll see those scores coming out in the September timeframe. So in 2026 in March, we'll redo it for fourth and eighth, and then we'll get about 6 months later those reports.
Karen Aronian, education and parenting expert with us here on KMOX. We appreciate that expertise. Thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you.
That is Karen Aronian. And so I think, John, that hopefully there's a little bit of a change here over the next several months. It'd be interesting to talk to her. I hate that we have to wait a year for those numbers to come back. Because she said, what, the results from the March study coming up in March will be in September of next year. So would like to talk more than a year from now and see what the update is.
Yeah, it is interesting because education in this country is in a real flux right now and reforming. But I think at the end of the day, these results, test results, I mean, all of it really goes back to socioeconomic circumstances and parental involvement in the home. And I think as you see now, are there the exceptional students that can overcome their socioeconomics and the lack of parental involvement? Yeah, there are. But certainly it's a hindrance to academic success, and you don't solve that problem by just simply more money. We've proven that that isn't the answer. So,
less money is not the answer either.
No.
It's just got to be better spent.
I think more options is part of the answer, but not every family is going to avail themselves of options that are out there, and that's a shame, but you can't make people, can't make people care.
On Twitter, you are welcome to watch the show at Chris Amy KMOX, and a comment says that maybe the CDC should not have based its recommendations on school closures from the teachers' unions instead of science. And that was partly directed by science. That's number one. And number two, this again was a worldwide thing. Schools closed all over the world. It wasn't just the United States. We're still falling behind other countries.
Yeah, and
explain that.
Yeah, and I think we've learned something through the pandemic. I don't know that we'll replicate that. I do think, in hindsight, looking back on 2020, I think it was a mistake to keep the schools closed as they did. Knowing what we now know about how the virus affected student-age populations, I don't think we'd make that mistake again. And I do think it was a mistake, but it was a mistake based on what folks
knew at the time.
Yep.
And the concern was kids would spread it, bring it home to people who were vulnerable.
Right.
And I think that is a logical conclusion to reach. Again, everybody was trying to navigate it best they could, I think, at that time. That is John Hancock. I'm Chris Ranji. John's favorite segment. Did you see this?
Hey.
Next on KMOX.
Now, did you see this? With Chris and Amy.
John Hancock, Chris Ranji on KMOX. All right. Are you, John, afraid of sharks?
No.
You're not?
No, because I don't get in the water.
Well, okay, so then you have no reason to be. A 16-year-old Colorado girl fought off two sharks on a family vacation.
Man.
Yeah. This is what she told to Fox 31. Her mother says, she said, I would never anticipate I would be attacked by a shark, but here I am. They were on a family vacation in Belize last month when this happened. She was in the water, and 3 days into the trip, they did a dive about 120 feet deep into a dark the ocean. And there were probably like three or four sharks that she said she saw, and then saw some cool fish. And then when she jumped into the water to go down there, a shark came from under the boat and started biting her hands.
Whoa.
She punched the shark about six times, and then the shark ran away.
Wow. Now, but she saw the sharks before she jumped in the water. Is that what I'm given to understand?
That's what it sounds like.
Well, I think it's time for a public service announcement.
Yeah.
If you're out there on the boat, folks, and you look down, and there's a couple or three sharks right there, I think it would be ill-advised at that point for you to jump into the water.
Now.
Because you might end up having to go all Joe Frazier on these sharks in order to spare your own life. And that's not a circumstance that I would wish upon anyone.
In defense of her, I'm assuming that the tour guides or whoever took them out there told them, hey, you don't have to worry about sharks. They don't like to go after humans.
Well, now, that's somebody that's never seen Jaws.
Okay.
I mean, of course they go after humans. There's sharks eating people all the time out there.
A lot more than you would like.
Yeah.
A lot more than you would like.
This is, which is why yours truly here choose, you know, we'll go to the beach sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, I might tiptoe out, you know, a little bit into the water, but that's about it. You know, I'm not getting anywhere near where a shark could get anywhere near me. Thereby, of all the things I may die from, and there's a whole wide variety of them, one of them will not be a shark attack.
You know, coming up at 11:30, we're going to talk to Jessica Stegan with the Great Forest Park Balloon Race.
Can't wait.
And every year at the Great Forest Park Balloon Race, the Golden Knights, the jumping team, the U.S. Army's parachute team, performs a couple days in a row.
Gotta love that.
We had them in studio a few years ago, and they were all afraid of sharks.
There you go.
These guys jumping out of airplanes times per day, yep, every single day. Not afraid of that.
Nope.
Afraid of the water because they're afraid of sharks.
Yeah, there you go.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.